Sometimes, you know, you look and say, well, you're not where you used to be. Tell me who is where they used to be and stays there for 25 years. Nobody. Nobody but us.
That was Gino Auriemma, the head coach of the most dominant college basketball team in a generation, the University of Connecticut Huskies. For years, the UConn women were automatic. You could set your watch to them steamrolling the competition. But recently, that hasn't been the case. Today, ahead of UConn's face-off with their old rival, Tennessee, why the Huskies stopped crushing everyone in their path, and what it tells us about the future of women's basketball. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Thursday, January 23rd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Indeed. Hi, LaChyna.
Hey, Mina, how are you?
LaChyna Robinson is a women's basketball analyst at ESPN and the host of the Around the Rim podcast. So tonight, we've got UConn women's basketball versus Tennessee, two traditional powerhouse rivals, though it hasn't been that case for a while now. And for UConn in particular, I think it's been an interesting year. If you haven't been paying attention to UConn over the last few years, you might assume that they're just going to blow them out like they blow out everyone. But that hasn't been the case recently, no?
No, it has not. And in case you're checking the trophy case, there has not been a national championship trophy in stores over the last 3 years, which is reason to panic. Honestly, Mina, it's all relative to Connecticut's success. I mean, they have 11 national championships, so the standard is always going to be national championship or bust. It is a storyline for sure, because we used to be able to just check the box, pencil in Connecticut, moving right along. But Gino Auriemma has more gray hair right now than I'm used to seeing. This group has definitely tested the boundaries of what we know to be UConn success. And so it should be an interesting game with Tennessee.
So they're still very good. They're just not world beaters the way they used to be.
I mean, they're 16-1, and they have not lost to an unranked team since 2012.
Jeez.
So, like, our expectations are almost, like, it's really kind of ridiculous. And I know Gino's talked about it.
We're 16-1. Why do I have to answer why we're not winning by enough, or why we miss so many shots, or why we turn the ball over, or why? Like, why? I thought the object was to win the game.
He's right. Like, the goal is to win. We're just used to seeing UConn beat UConn, like beat teams by 50. Some of the questions that we're asking about their program, you should, right? Because there is a kind of fall from grace. I mean, they haven't made it past the Final Four in the last 3 years after winning four straight national championships. But to say that Connecticut is, you know, not a good team and some of the other things we've heard out here, that's just, to me, a little bit of a stretch.
I think you make a good point, LaChyna, which is it's more about the standard, the expectation that this program set. As recently as the 2016 season, they went 38-0. But it was after that, as you point out, when they started to slip a little bit. When did that first begin?
The recent slippage, to me, has everything to do with the graduation of Breanna Stewart.
Here's Stewart again. Got it. Three-pointer. She can't miss. That kid is absolutely on fire.
Breanna Stewart is a player like we have never seen in college women's basketball. She's the most outstanding player of the Final Four 4 years in a row. When you look at Connecticut's success, it's been connected to great players like a Breanna Stewart, who won four of those 11 championships.
Connecticut brings the title back to stores in 2013.
Then Diana Taurasi wins three.
The three-peat for UConn, a Taurasi trifecta.
And Maya Moore wins two.
Perfection, 78-0. Connecticut has won the national championship again.
Gino said it himself. He once said, hey, we have Diana Taurasi and you don't. And that was the difference between them and the rest of the country. And for a time, that was everything. And that, to me, has been a key to their dominance, is having that Maya Moore, Breanna Stewart, Diana Taurasi. And so the conversation, even if you go way, way back and look at the history of Tennessee and Connecticut, for example, back then, women's college basketball did not have the depth of talent, in my opinion, that there is now. So it was like, if you didn't get Shamequa Holdsclaw, good luck. If you didn't get Rebecca Lobo, good luck. So what we're seeing now is not just about what UConn is not, but that other programs are competing in recruiting. Asia Wilson, who's the number one overall player coming out of high school, goes to South Carolina, or Haley Jones, the number one overall recruit, goes to Stanford. Then the conversation starts to change.
So now there's more good players, and as you're saying, they're more spread out across programs. Do you think any of them chose not to go to UConn because of, you know, the competition and the success, or do you think it was just the product of other programs, you know, making good sales to them?
First of all, Geno's not for everybody.
When I watch game film, I'm checking what's going on the bench. And if somebody's asleep over there, somebody doesn't care, somebody's not engaged in the game, they will never get in the game. Ever. And they know that. They know I'm not kidding.
You know, I mean, his coaching style, the expectations. Everyone is not cut out for that. Think about Elena Deladon, who actually went to Connecticut and then said, no, thanks, you know, and left. Or there's players that want to stay closer to home. And there are some that just say, hey, there needs to be more than Connecticut on the map. Like, how can we do that? And or how can I bring more pride to my state? And, you know, I think social media has helped women's basketball in spreading the word on some of these other programs. You know, look at a Mississippi State or South Carolina, where Dawn Staley, who is one of the greatest players to ever play, takes over a college program. Well, now that's more attractive, and what she's done with her crowd, you know, I mean, it's just, it's a number of factors, but I do think that some of the top recruits were making a conscious decision to do something different.
So, LaChyna, a couple weeks ago, UConn hosted Baylor, last year's national champions, and not only did the Huskies lose, they lost by double digits, which is something that hasn't happened to them since 2012.
Number one goes down again, and the longest home court win streak in the country and one of the longest in the history of the sport is done at 98. Baylor with one of the most impressive wins of the season.
What did you make of that?
I didn't really make a lot of it because I didn't come in really expecting Connecticut to dominate, and I didn't think it was out of the question for them to lose by double figures. Connecticut used to win games by just putting on their jersey. Like, literally, teams, it was a psychological thing where it was like, oh, we're playing UConn. Oh, we're not going to beat them, right? But now, since we've seen them vulnerable, whether it was Mississippi State.
Mississippi State has ended the streak at 111 consecutive games. It's over.
Or them losing to Notre Dame twice in the Final Four.
Final seconds. The Irish put down the Huskies for a second straight year, and they're headed back to the championship game.
Teams have watched Connecticut lose, so now it's like, okay, maybe we do have a shot, right? And so I don't think that, and not that Baylor has ever been intimidated, but I just think that teams, you know, don't really come in feeling like they can't beat Connecticut, and they can't beat them maybe by a significant number. You know, another thing you have to look at too, Mina, is, and this is one of the theories about, you know, why Connecticut has kind of fallen off a little bit over time, but they've been competing in the American Athletic Conference, which is not as strong as the old Big East. I mean, for years, Connecticut was competing and playing close games in conference play against Rutgers and Notre Dame and Louisville, you know, who were all great programs that could easily be in the Final Four. I mean, there were several years where it was an all Big East Final Four. And they don't have that in the American Athletic Conference. So there was a little bit of a stretch where it was like, well, Connecticut is not playing enough close games. And then when they get to the Final Four, they're used to blowing people out and they're not used to close contests. So that is one of the theories that's kind of come into play as well. But I do think that when you look at the big picture, Connecticut is still a very good team and that expectations are just really high.
Coming up, what happened to all those people who said UConn's dominance was bad for the sport? And where did that idea come from anyways?
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The UConn Huskies are undefeated national champions and the first ever to win 4 in a row. A team without power.
LaChyna, it wasn't that long ago that there was an ongoing conversation, I would call it concern trolling, about whether or not UConn's dominance was bad for women's basketball.
UConn women beat Mississippi State 98-38 in NCAA tourney. Hate to punish them for being great, but they are killing the women's game. Watch? No thanks.
Where did that narrative come from?
Yeah, and you know, just to talk about that attitude of they're winning too much, that was really ridiculous. Like, and you know this too, there's just this misogynistic attitude, first and foremost, towards women's sports that exists just in general in the world, where people are looking for any reason not to watch women's sports, right? So it's like, oh, they're not dunking, it's boring. Or, oh, Connecticut is going to win anyway, so why watch? Well, how many great teams have you heard that about? Do people say that about the Patriots? Do you ever hear them say, oh, winning is terrible. Excellence is, oh, gosh, who wants to watch that? You know, you still play the game. And to me, teams like Tennessee and Connecticut, they set the standard for what excellence looks like in this game. I mean, if you watch Connecticut basketball and you watch how hard they play, the fundamentals, how well they are coached, you know, just their passing, their understanding of the game of basketball, it's beautiful to watch. It's the way the game should be played. And yeah, they just happen to route you by 50 on the way there. Is that their fault? No. You know, and so I just, that whole attitude of, oh, UConn's bad for women's basketball, that just gave people that didn't want to watch women's sports in the first place a reason to complain, period.
A couple of years ago, I tweeted something about UConn women's basketball winning. I can't remember if it was during the regular season or March Madness. And someone wrote back to me, that's why no one watches, because they're so dominant. And I don't think he knew that UConn had been losing recently.
Right, it just, exactly. Yes, is that reputation? Like, you have it. Like, when's the last time you actually watched, or have you ever watched? That's the other question. Is they assume it's boring because they're winning by a lot, but do you see how they're winning? Do you, you know, I mean, if somebody makes a nice play off a jumper, a jump shot off a screen, or, you know, whatever it is, runs a play to perfect execution, it's still nice to watch. You know, who's talking about the Golden State Warriors or they're in prime? I mean, they were fun to watch despite how they were dominating. And so to me, again, I just think that's an attitude that people need to do away with.
Well, let's talk about that dominance and the dynasty and just how good they were. I mean, how would you characterize UConn women's basketball over the last 3 decades?
I mean, you said it, dominant. I mean, we haven't seen anything like it in our sport. And it's not just even on the college landscape. I mean, you have to even move to the WNBA because we're talking about women's basketball, period. You can look at USA basketball. Like, Connecticut players have gone on to set the standard of excellence. Maya Moore won 4 WNBA championships in her first, 8 years in the league, 7 years in the league. Mm-hmm. Like, that is, that it just speaks for itself. I mean, winning at all levels, it's really something like we've never seen and may never see again.
Well, back in 1985, when Gino Auriemma first took over the program, they didn't have anything close to the reputation they eventually acquired. I mean, you mentioned Lachina. Stores is not for everyone. It's in the middle of rural Connecticut. It's very cold. I have been there. And when he got there, you know, he had a losing record his first year. But that was it. That was the last time he had a losing record. What do you think it was about him that sort of sparked that run of dominance?
There are a couple things that have stood out to me about Gino over time that I think really have separated him. And number one is the culture that he's created. It's basically one of no excuses.
You walk into our practice facility and you look up on the walls. There's a lot of people whose names are on that wall that worked really, really hard. And there's this sense they have, like, I don't want to be the one that screws this up.
The other thing, Mina, is the brand. The UConn brand is tough. I mean, from the bleed blue, you know, the Huskies, just that we are in this club and you're not. And we're the cool kids. Like, that was who they are. Like, if you want to get drafted number one overall in the WNBA, if you want to play for USA Basketball, if you want to have all the great Nike gear, you're going to come to Connecticut. So that's your decision. And I think he did a great job of building that no-nonsense, very competitive, serious brand of both basketball on the court, but also off the court. That was attractive to people. That was mysterious. That made recruits want to go to Connecticut.
When you look back at the time, Lachina, when UConn was dominant, what do you think that meant for women's basketball?
I think it represented what it takes to be great in this sport. Connecticut set the standard, and they still do in a lot of ways, for how your women's basketball program can go from nothing to greatness. It's one of the best stories we've ever seen in sport. And what they've done for the sport in bringing attention to it with their dominance has benefited everyone. Everyone has benefited from watching their style of play, from can we run a motion offense and, you know, can we play man-to-man defense, which no one is doing these days, by the way. But all of these things are an example to the coaches and the programs out there of what can be and what you can do. Now, are you going to win 11 national championships? No, probably not. But this is what it looks like if you want to have consistent success. So I do think it's been good for the sport and good for the game that it happened. But this next phase is really about the diversity of success in women's basketball. No one can say that watching Morgan William hit a buzzer beater against Connecticut in the Final Four was not a great moment.
William on the drive. Pull up, pull up. Got it. She got it. She got it. One of the great upsets in history.
It was an amazing moment. It was an amazing moment. And the Giants were slayed. And, you know, now we know Mississippi State. Now we know Morgan William. And now you're watching that next Connecticut game because you're saying, wow, they just lost. They could lose again. We all love those moments when the underdog wins. And we love those moments when Connecticut is great.
Thanks so much, Lachina.
Thank you, Mina. Appreciate you having me.
Coming up, a farewell to the NFL's Iron Man. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/pass the protection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now's your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/pass the protection. Here's another story I want you to know. Yesterday, ESPN's Dan Graziano and Jordan Renan reported that Giants quarterback Eli Manning is going to hold a news conference on Friday to announce that, after 16 seasons in the NFL, he's retiring. What this means is, over the next couple of days, you're going to hear a lot about Eli's career. You'll hear about how he's a two-time Super Bowl winner and MVP. He ranks 7th all-time in passing yards and touchdowns. He's responsible for some of the most memeable faces in the history of sports. And he's also, in my opinion, the best athlete to ever host SNL. Then we'll start debating what it all means, what the sport will look like without him, where he stacks up in the ranks of quarterbacks throughout history, whether he belongs in the Hall of Fame, all of which are fair discussions. But to me, the one thing that can never be debated, the aspect of Eli's legacy that stands out most in my mind, is his durability. Think about it. Since 2004, when he started his career, he never missed a single start on account of injury. In that time, the country went through 3 presidents. He started playing football before Twitter was invented, which is a shame, really, given the aforementioned memeable faces. About a month ago, after Manning's final start, former Giants kicker Lawrence Tynes told our Ian O'Connor that the quarterback was, I quote, "the most consistent human being he has ever played with," which he meant, I think, in multiple senses. Now, you can chart up some of his longevity to good fortune, but Eli was also incredibly tough. For me, the game that stands out the most in my mind isn't one of the Super Bowls, but rather the 2011 NFC Championship versus San Francisco. Eli absorbed 20 hits, 12 knockdowns, and 6 sacks, and he kept playing. For years and years, he kept playing. I think that's one reason why fans loved him so much. Because Eli played for so long and was such a consistent presence, he almost seemed like someone you could count on, like a friend. And for that reason, amongst others, he will be missed. I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.